strength. You must be an anti-Semite. You must be an anti-Semite. If you don't like the idea of shooting mortar rounds at kids, it must be because you just don't like the Yids. Israel bombs hospitals, if you heard that on the news, it must be because that network doesn't like the Jews. All those UN agencies crying genocide secretly still blame us for the way that Jesus died. There's just one explanation we keep within our sights. You must be an anti-Semite. You must be an anti-Semite. If you think free speech is a really good thing, if you fear the future that censorship may bring, if you think Mark Zuckerberg is a pawn of the CIA, if you don't believe whatever the Western leaders say, if you march and chant from the river to the sea, if you say you'll keep fighting until Palestine is free, there's just one explanation right there in black and white. You must be an anti-Semite. You must be an anti-Semite. If you're not a fan of home demolitions, if you've got some kind of problem with the Zionist position, it can't be that you care about humanity. It can't be just that you want some sanity. If you don't like the slaughter, you'd better just stand by. Don't speak out or else we'll all know the reason why. There's just one explanation, the one from the far right. You must be an anti-Semite. You must be an anti-Semite.
And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, what can be done to stop the horror of Israel's genocide in Gaza and the West Bank? Director and co-founder of the Bernard Boecker Center Foundation, Terry Wolfwood, says, quote, as the death toll and destruction continue in Gaza, we can help by ending Canada's complicity. Terry has served as local coordinator for the Women in Black for many years and has traveled numerous times to the refugee camps in Palestine and Western Sahara to bear witness and bring the message of the people she meets there back to Canada. Her articles have appeared at Briar Patch, Peace News, and Third World Resurgence, among other places, and at the foundation site, bbcf.ca. Welcome back to the program, Terry.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here.
Well, it's always...
I'm not glad about the subject.
Well, no, and that's always the case whenever we speak, but it's always a joy nonetheless to speak with you. Now, Terry, as you know, I've been going down to the weekly demonstrations at the BC Legislature here in Victoria since mid-October, and I heard you at one of those events address the crowds there about your trips to Palestine. Terry, could you share that with our audience, too? First of all, when did you first go there?
I think I first went in 2008, and then I've been many times since then. I haven't been since COVID, and I was supposed to go this fall, but the meeting I was asked to go to was canceled, of course, because of the war. So maybe I'll be going in a few months. But I've gone all over the West Bank with all different organizations, been to schools, clinics, meetings with local councils, women's organizations, farmers, students. I've planted olive trees and I've picked olives. So I've really seen the West Bank. Unfortunately, I've never been to Gaza. But to the average Palestinian, Gaza is nothing separate because they're all related. They all have family there. Everybody knows somebody in Gaza who's been killed or displaced. And they're their family. It's all one family. So when I say I have never been to Gaza, no, I haven't, but I've been very involved in what goes on in Gaza up until the war, even.
Well, of course, Gaza is getting all the press coverage, and that actually is falling off. A friend of mine who's been following what's going on closely, too, said to me just yesterday that he scans the Guardian newspaper, the English paper, mm-hmm. online edition, and he said yesterday was the first day that there was not a single mention of Gaza in their entire edition, and that was the first ever. So he surmises that the press, the Western presses, the mainstream presses are conspiring now to disappear Gaza. But they've been very successful in disappearing the West Bank. We hardly hear a word about what's going on in the West Bank, and there's terrible things happening there under the radar, as the cliche goes. Mm-hmm. have you been in contact with your friends and contacts there? And can you, are they telling you what's going on?
Well, I tell you, no young man will go out on the street. Everything was canceled, including Christmas in Bethlehem, because no young man goes out on the street, because you'll just get picked up and shipped to jail in Israel. So the olive harvest is very slow, because only old people and children are picking olives. And people are living in a state of fear, and a lot of people are being killed, even though they're being very careful. So, yes, the West Bank is the next, it's a continuing target. 75 years, what's new? And as far as the Palestinians are concerned, this is just a continuation of 75 years of war and occupation.
It may be a continuation, Terry, but it seems to definitely be an escalation.
Yes, definitely, for sure. And, of course, the settlers, there's almost 1 million illegal Israelis living in the West Bank in settlements, which is totally against the Geneva Accords. And they can do anything they like. They can stone people to death. They can burn houses down. They can do whatever they like with total impunity. And so the settlers are rarely ever mentioned. But I got chased by the settlers when I was picking olives the last time I was there. And my host, who I was picking olives with, said, well, sometimes they wait until we pick them, and then they come and take the bags of olives. And other times they just stop us from picking them. You know, and I could see these young men coming down from the hilltop from the settlements in their white T-shirts. And away they came. And people just go in the house and lock themselves in when they come. And we got all rounded up and taken back to the school ground. I wanted to stay, of course, but no, they wouldn't let me. Well, so that's what goes on all the time. And this year, the olive harvest is really low because of this. And that's important because olives is the main economic background strength for what Palestine can produce is mainly olives. And 90% of it's turned into olive oil. And we may have not a very great shortage of Palestinian olive oil in the next year because of it.
Well, it's not only Palestinian olive oil that's short short supply right now, but even across Europe, there's people in Spain, of all places, complaining about the price of olive oil because the supplies are grown so short.
Well, they have a fungus that's growing all through Italy, France, Spain, and Greece, and that's cutting down the world's supply of olive oil as well.
Because
they had such hot summers.
Well, Terry, what about now? Netanyahu has moved the Likud party, which was always a right-wing party, but has moved it to the extreme right. His ruling coalition includes a lot of the settler parties in the Knesset. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I'm no expert on Israeli politics, but can you surmise about the constitution of Israel's current government and what's going on right now? I mean, is this just the outgrowth of the extremist elements within the political process in Israel wagging the dog, as it were?
Well, I think so, and because they're so desperate. And of course, Netanyahu was about to go to jail probably if he hadn't had a war to cope with. And because of the war, he's become a great hero. So he's altogether too willing to let the right wing rule the roost. And besides, they really want to get rid of Palestinians. The whole thing has always been a drive to get rid of the people. You know, years ago, somebody said, the bride is beautiful, but she's married to another man. That was the Zionists when they went in, over 100 years ago. The bride being the country. And she was indeed married to another man. She was married to the indigenous Palestinians. And it's no secret that they tried to drive the Palestinians out of the country. They did it once in 48, and they're still trying to do it. And there are thoughts that this right-wing party is going to take over Gaza and essentially drive the people out. That's what they want to do. They want Gaza without people.
Now, what about the Canadian response, the Canadian government response? It seems there's been a big hue and cry to bring Israel to the International Court of Justice for genocide. Everything that it's exhibited over the last few months, if not few decades or more than that, is proof of the definition of genocide. And yet Canada has still not made, this government has not made any declarations in that regard. The opposite, in fact.
Canada's right in there with the USA. We know that, and Britain and France and most of Western Europe, except Ireland, maybe. And we know that Canada's too afraid to stand up. Why are we afraid to stand up to 7 million people in Israel? There's more than 7 million people, but there's 7 million first-class citizens in Israel. The others are second-class citizens because they're Arab. I don't know either, except I know that they're desperate. And South Africa, I would have really liked to mention it and applaud South Africa for bringing them to the international court. And I think that one of the things we can do as Canadians is to bring pressure on Canada, who say they're a great supporter of human rights globally, to support the South African case. We can do that. We can phone up Trudeau's hotline and talk to him. We can send him letters. We can send him emails. We can talk to all members of parliament. The NDP, which is the local MPs, are mostly NDP. And they say they support the Liberal government. Well, they can bring pressure on the Liberal government too. And we should do that. That's all we can do as Canadians. We're not going to influence the Americans or the Israelis, but we can influence Canada. And we should be doing that. And we should stop sending arms to Israel and stop sending aid. And then another thing is that I really wanted to talk about, and I'm sending you the address if people wanted at the end of the show, a wonderful webinar on charitable donations in Canada. Now, charities are very strictly controlled by law, and there are only certain purposes that you can have a charity for, educational and helping people with health and other things, but no advocacy and no militarization. And yet we have a whole bunch of charitable organizations in Canada that send their money to Israel to support the military there, and we're trying to get them all out of this. You see, for instance, the founder of Indigo Chapters Books has a foundation called the Hesek Foundation. So instead of paying tax on profits, you put the profits in a charitable donation and you get a charitable receipt. So she puts her money in that, and that money supports anybody who wants to be a soldier in the IDF anywhere in the world, and helps pay for their education after they've served. Well, what on earth has that got to do with education in Canada or helping poverty alleviation in poor countries? And it's a really a disgrace that charitable donations are allowed to last. And the Canada Foreign Policy Institute, which is a wonderful organization based in Montreal, puts on excellent webinars, and they put a webinar on this. And when you hear all four speakers with all their statistics and background, you'll really understand this. So I've sent you the link to that webinar.
That's on YouTube. It's called Solidarity with Peace 11, the 11th iteration of this theme. Why the Hesek Foundation should have its charitable status revoked. The Hesek Foundation is the one you mentioned now. Yeah. And if people wonder why the chapter's books is being inundated with demonstrations and blockades and so forth, this is the reason. It's curious to me, Terry, though. I thought that it was against the law for Canadian citizens to serve in foreign militaries, other than, of course, our own military personnel being seconded regularly to the United States. But for citizens to join up in foreign armies as mercenaries, or even in this case, I can't see them as being less than mercenaries if they go to Israel to fight for the IDF or to enforce the occupation there. But yeah, as you mentioned, the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, Bianca Mugheni and Eve Engler, he's behind that, do a lot of terrific work. I'm curious though, Terry, when you say that because of the war now, Netanyahu has gone from zero to hero. From what I've seen, he's not out of the woods. His political opposition is reforming. He's had a little bit of a respite because there was tens of thousands in the streets against him, hundreds of thousands.
Well, war is a great unifying force. We know that in every country, that you know, if you oppose a war, your country's in, it's treason. So this is a good way for him to consolidate his support. But there is a lot of opposition to him. There always has been. There is a percentage of the Israeli population that have been working very hard against the occupation, very bravely. and speaking out and going to jail and demonstrating. So yes, it's not a united front by any means, but he's managed to unite much of the country behind his war effort for now. But it may not last, and
Yeah,
I hope it doesn't last before it spreads into Lebanon and Syria, and of course the ultimate enemy is Iran.
Well, and just yesterday there was an assassination of a highly ranked Hamas military leader in Beirut,
Yes,
and
I've been in that camp. I know where it was. I know exactly where he was assassinated. And heaven knows it's a crowded camp with buildings and everything. It's really quite shocking that they've been in there before and killed people, the Israelis. They really hate Lebanon because Lebanon chased them out of the country. And they've never forgiven Lebanon, and they're going to attack, do what they can to attack any Palestinian in Lebanon. They've done it before. They've assassinated lots of people all the way back to, the 70s and the 60s.
Well, who can forget the Sabra and
Well, that's
Shatila
where I was.
massacres? And that was Sharon as the engineer
That's
of
right.
that in 82, if my
82, I
memory
think, right?
serves.
I
Well,
think
it.
it was 82. I've been to the graveyard inside the camp. They have the graveyard is actually right inside the camp. And I've seen the graves of all the people that were killed in that attack. Yeah, they're ruthless. And Canada talks about supporting global human rights and that human rights are indivisible. Well, if we can support human rights in Ukraine, why can't we support them in Palestine? And I think that's one of the things we should keep bringing up to Trudeau. We're supporting it. Ukraine, but we can't support Palestine. What's wrong with us? There's a reason and there's a context, but nonetheless, people have the right to demand that of Trudeau. And if Trudeau doesn't win the next election and the Conservatives do, there's going to be an even fiercer struggle because they are really pro-Israel. And yeah, it'll be really bad if the Conservatives win the next election.
Well, that's hard to imagine. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with director and co-founder of the Bernard Boecker Center Foundation, Terry Wolfwood. Terry has also served as the local coordinator for the Women in Black for many years, standing silent vigil. And she's traveled numerous times as we're talking to the refugee camps in Palestine and also Western Sahara, which you and I, Terry, have talked about in the
Yes.
past. And you say, Terry, you said in your address that where I started at the BC legislature, but I've heard you say it in the past as well, that when you talk to Palestinians and you ask them, well, what can I do? What can I do to help? They say to you, go back to your country and work in your country to get your country to change its policies. And when you say that, well, the Tories are as bad or worse even than the Liberal parties when it comes to Canada's foreign policy regarding Palestine, and where does that leave us? Now, the NDP has been an utter, in my mind at least, a disaster on this issue. They had one of their MPs had the temerity to show up at one of these demonstrations and speak, but they what she didn't acknowledge was that the NDP is a part of the ruling government right now. It's a minority government that they could bring down this government at any moment. And yet the NDP, as far as I'm aware, has been pretty quiet on what's going on in Gaza right now.
They always have been. And there's many things that we can do, though. And one of the things is that we should investigate the Canada P Pension Plan. Most people don't know that the Canada Pension Plan invests in armaments companies. And so if you're either contributing or receiving the Canada pension, you're complicit. We're all complicit in it. We're all re required. It's obligatory to be in the Canada Pension Plan if you're a working person or a retired person. And we invest in some of the biggest arms companies in the world that make nuclear weapons and other weapons. And so we make a profit from those arms. But Canada also helps arms companies sell arms to Israel with all kinds of things like trade fairs and loans and subsidies, because that's all outside. The arms trade is outside all other trade agreements. It's separate from it. And it's just like the nuclear weapons are separate from any arms deals, and the military are exempt from any environmental attempts global policy on climate change, the military always exempt. So we have to look at that and how we invest in the military and in our country. That's one thing. But we can boycott all kinds of things. There are many things that are involved. Many companies are involved in Israel, and we need to boycott them. And there is a boycott coalition in Canada, and I've sent you the link to that, the BDS coalition in Canada. And they have got some really good information about the Bank of Montreal, the Bank of Scotia Bank, and many other Canadian companies. For instance, like Airbnb rents out places in the illegal settlements. If you want to go to Israel, they'll rent you a B&B in the settlement. So Airbnb is deeply involved in what goes on in Israel, and many companies are. And I recommend that people look up the Canada Boycott Coalition BDS website and see all this information, because it's all out there. We can find it all. Same with the Canada Pension Plan. If you go on the Canada Pension Plan Investments website, you'll see what Canada invests in and how we're complicit in the occupation and oppression of Palestinians, and have been for many years. There's a park in Israel called the Canada Park, and it's built on the ruins of a village that was destroyed, a Palestinian village. So we've been complicit for 75 years. It's escalating, but it's nothing new. And it was a Palestinian, when I phoned a Palestinian in the beginning of October after the raid in Gaza, she said, well, you know, you're responsible. You're as responsible as anybody else, you Canadian, because you've gone along with this all this time. So she said, do something about Canada. That was my Palestinian friend, and she's right.
Well, back in the 1990s, Paul Martin, a Liberal Party member, a prime minister, but Paul Martin, before becoming prime minister, was the finance minister, and he was the one that ushered in the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, which corporatized the CPP, and they say, well, we have to just go where the profit is maximized. So if it's going to be energy companies that are polluting, or military companies, or whatever it is, sorry, our hands are tied. Of course, it's not true. It's disingenuous. But the website you mentioned is bdscoalition.ca. Boycott, divestment, and sanction movement is something that's been a thorn in the side of Israel for a very long time. bdscoalition.ca. The other website on the Canadian pension plan, which is absolutely shameful, and as you rightly say, that we're Canadians are induced to cooperate or become collaborators in war making at cppinvestments.com to find out more information about those. Well, Terry, we're fast running out of time, but before we part company once more, in November, you launched another book, Passion and Commitment. Do you want to talk a little bit about Passion and Commitment?
Oh, that's very sweet of you. Thank you, Chris. It is a book of my poetry collection of the last 10 years. It's my second poetry collection. And of course, because Palestine has occupied a great deal of my passion and my commitment, there are a number of poems about Palestine in there, but there are a lot of poems about First Nations people in Canada, street people in Canada, the many things that I have cared about and still are committed to until I ceased my activity. So I've been an activist all my life, and I continue to be one. And I encourage other people to be it. And both art and literary art and visual art are an important part of resistance to oppression. And there's some wonderful art in Palestine. And I just saw the most beautiful sculpture on the internet that you can find. It's by a Tunisian sculptor called Omar Estar. And it's called The Scream of Gaza. And these things can move you as well as the statistics and as well as the politics. And I think it's very important that we as whole people be involved, not just politically, but personally, artistically, and creatively. It's part of our lives.
Yes, I've seen a photograph of that sculpture you mentioned. Yeah, and it is moving. And Carolyn Pogue writes of your book, Beware, the poems from Teresa Wolfwood. They will enter you and take you places you may never have been before. A bridge to the wild side, a bereaved mother's heart, a kitchen sink in Mexico, and so much more. Don't say you weren't warned. And that's Terry Wolfwood's latest book of poems, Passion and Commitment. How do people get your book now?
Oh, it's at Ivy's bookstore in Old Bay.
Go down to Ivy's, of course. Who else? Terry, thanks a lot for coming on again. I mean, as you mentioned, it's always the topics that we discuss are never sunny, but there's still hope, eh?
I think that we don't know what power we have until we exercise it. And I think we should all be activists and do what we can. Everybody can do what they can in their own way. Not everybody can speak at a rally, and not everybody can go to Palestine. But there's so many things that we can do. We can tell London Drugs to stop selling SodaStream pop machines and things like that. Lots of things that we can do, and it all contributes. It all comes together. And we can sleep better at night knowing that we've done something to make the world a better place.
And again, bdscoalition.ca, cppinvestments.com. And you can also go to the Canadian policy. Oh, geez, I've forgotten it now. Canadian Foreign Policy Institute. Of course, how could I forget? Thanks again, Terry, for coming on. Eh? And I want to also thank Jeremy Kosmarev. Go over to his site, covertactionmagazine.com, not just his site, but that's where he's the editor, covertactionmagazine.com. They're seeking financial support. Their work is absolutely invaluable, especially now with the media being so constrained and so one-sided.
I have an e-subscription that was given to me by Covert Action because I was a friend of one of their most faithful writers, Bill Bloom, who passed away a few years ago. So in honor of Bill Bloom, I get a Covert Action e-subscription, and it's full of information that most Americans would never ever find anywhere else.
Yeah, it's absolutely fabulous. And speaking of past greats, John Pilger, of course, over the weekend, and I put up at my website my interview with John Pilger from many years back in remembrance of him. What a giant.
He was a wonderful man too. We're losing all these people, so more of us need to step up.
Yeah.
And there's lots of young people, brilliant young people in the world as activists. And we just have to honor them and support them as best we can.
Absolutely. Come forward now. The time is now. Thanks again, Terry.
Thanks, Chris. Great to be on.
All right. Bye now. That's all I've got for this week. Till the next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
For 6 weeks now, the bombing has continued. Every few minutes, another child dies. Crushed without warning beneath the rubble of their homes. And that's where her body lies. And those who are pulled out from the carnage, and who may just live to see another day, may first meet a doctor with a marker, who will inscribe 5 letters down to say, writing on the bodies of survivors, an acronym for anyone to see, WCNSF. Wounded child with no surviving family. Entire families missing from the register, since they all lived and slept in the same tower block that generations shared. Now it's just a street with a name. Last month had a row of buildings that used to be alive with children playing. Now a doctor scrawls on an armless boy as his parents still beneath the rubble decaying. Writing on the bodies of survivors, acronym for anyone to see, WCNSF, wounded child with no surviving family.
Good morning and welcome to